From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Today at Nashua Community College, New Hampshire U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen will highlight her efforts to promote the fields of science, technology, engineering, and math, commonly known as STEM. Shaheen has a bill pending to increase grants aimed at this area of study. She calls it a strategic investment in innovation and future economic competitiveness. The senator's efforts are among many these days to boost STEM education. There are multiple bills in Congress. The White House has initiatives. And here in New Hampshire, the state's public higher education institutions have committed to doubling the number of STEM graduates by 2025. They and others promoting these fields often cite some startling numbers about the jobs of the future. According to one study, by 2018, New Hampshire will have 43,000 STEM-related jobs to be filled. And the question is, will enough Granite Staters be ready to fill them? But here's another question that's just started bubbling up. Will those workers necessarily need STEM degrees? In an era where employers say they also desire critical thinkers and excellent communicators, would an English or history degree be just as useful? Today in The Exchange, taking stock of STEM, what the push is all about, whether it's possible to go overboard on STEM, and let's hear from you. If you work in a STEM-related business, what do you think of the current emphasis on your field? Is it overdone or overdue? If you're an employer, what skills do you most want in new hires? And if you're a recent high school or college graduate, what choices are you making, either about a career or field of study, given the focus these days on STEM? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests with us. Fred Coker is here, president of the New Hampshire High Technology Council and founder and president of Coker & Company, a marketing and communications firm. And Fred, it's nice to see you. Thanks for being here.
Nice to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Beth Salerno, Associate Professor of History at St. Anselm College, author of Sister Societies, Women's Anti-Slavery Organizations in Antebellum America. And Beth, welcome back and good to see you too.
Thank you.
And also with us, Ali Rafimir, Dean and Director of UNH Manchester Campus and a Professor of Computer Science there. And Ali, it's nice to meet you and thank you for your time as well.
Glad to be here.
Well, and I want to start with you. Why are we hearing, Ali, so much about STEM these days? Again, science, technology, engineering, and math.
As you mentioned before, we have committed to increase the number of graduates in the STEM area at the university level by 50% by 2020 and another 50% by 2025. It's a field that we need to grow. And unfortunately, there are not too many students and high school students that are interested in that area. Therefore, we have to really go through pathway from K through 16 in order to get them excited early on.
So it's not just college degrees that we're talking about here, community college. We're talking K through 12 here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you said we need to do this. Make the case for why we need to do this.
Technology is everywhere. I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I was watching the TV and I saw a commercial about a bathroom shower operated by remote control that you can set the temperature and in the temperature that you want, and just before you go in the shower, you just click, and it sets it to the temperature you want. Everything you see these days around, it requires some technology involved with it, even if it's not a STEM area.
Yeah, and it's also referred to as a need for American global competitiveness. Do you ascribe, Ali, to the fear these days, or the sentiment that Americans are falling behind in this STEM area?
Yes, there are reports actually that are showing that on average, U.S. Is graduating in the STEM area from colleges about 50%, 5%, and when Europe is doing 12%, and Asia is doing 20% of their students that they're graduate from college, they're doing a STEM degree. Therefore, we are actually getting behind.
What do you think, Fred Coker? What are you hearing from New Hampshire businesses about STEM education and what they see lacking?
Well, it sort of reflects a study just done by the American Association of Colleges and Universities that I pulled off of the Georgetown University Center. It was done in January 2013. It's really recent. And they asked the question, what do American businesses want from their college hires? And 74% said a 21st century liberal arts education in order to create a more dynamic worker. And 95% said they look for graduates who can think clearly and solve problems and be able to translate their ideas with good oral communication skills. So that's what they're looking for. They're looking for the well-rounded employee. However, in New Hampshire, and that is true in New Hampshire too, I would say, in New Hampshire, about 9% of our workforce is involved in STEM, but that creates about 25% of the gross state product.
Wow.
So that's a significant piece of our economy. And, you know, Laura, it really is boils down these days to supply and demand. There's a demand on the part of businesses for STEM workers from high-tech businesses, especially software professionals, engineering, but the supply is not there. And so there is a push from everywhere for STEM workers because that's where the demand is. But if you're to really dig down with the CEOs of these same companies, they're going to say, I want somebody with a STEM education, but I want a liberal arts background too.
Wow. So that's really interesting. And I wonder how do you figure that out, Fred? I mean, can you have both? I mean, how many years of college can people do?
Ideally, you can have both. I think the ideal is to perhaps do STEM in your undergraduate work and then focus in your graduate work, because the unemployment rate among graduates in graduate work, after you do graduate work, is much lower than it is for a bachelor's degree.
And much lower for people with bachelor's degrees versus
right.
those with
And that's the other point. Of course, unemployment among those with a liberal arts education is much higher than those with a STEM education.
So if I ask you again, what you hear from New Hampshire businesses, you would say, Fred Coker, they want both.
Yes, they want both. But, you know, short term, some of the companies that are growing, in particular, the small companies that are growing very fast, they need people who can write code. They need software engineers, and that is a priority. From management standpoint, they would like people who have both, liberal arts and STEM.
Beth, what do you think? You're a history professor. Have we been here before?
We have. Higher education has expanded dramatically, particularly since World War II and again in the 1970s. And college education used to be for sort of 10% of the population. Everybody else finished high school and got employed. You could work in Detroit in what might then have been called a STEM job. That was high technology, to work in an auto plant. Now, almost 70% of students go to college, and some high percentage of that finish college. Of course, those high technology jobs have become even more complicated. So, I think we have been here before. As we have had waves of education, there's been this debate, what are we educating them for? The Booker T. Washington, Frederick Douglass debates about educating African Americans were, do you educate them for the job that they need right now? Or do you educate them for the future jobs that they might create or the ideas that they might develop? So I think we have seen this before. I agree with Fred Coker very much that interdisciplinarity is really the wave of the past and the wave of the future, that we've got to train scientists who can understand culture. Otherwise, what they create isn't useful for swaths of the population. And we've got to have liberal arts graduates, some of whom are scientists, but others of whom are historians, English majors, who understand science and technology, not just because they're using it, but because issues like global warming are not going to be solved solely by scientists.
You know, I love that you refer to this debate. What are we educating people for? Who are we educating and what are we educating them for? That's really interesting. Give us a little bit more on that, Beth, about, you know, when that was happening and what people thought of that debate at the time.
Mm. Again, there have been multiple waves, but America has always had two ideals, that we're going to educate an elite who is going to lead everybody else. They're either going to lead them in technology or they're going to lead them politically. They're going to lead them with the ideas. And so in the 1840s, when you had the first public schools, it was for democracy. Everybody needs to be educated enough to vote and participate in the culture. Again, in the 1890s, you've got massive numbers of kids going directly into factories. There was a real worry that there was going to be a two-track education system. Those kids were never going to be the management. They were always going to be the workers. That's why you have children's laws against children working, right, to make sure that they go to school and
child
they have options.
Laws, child right.
labor laws. I think today the argument is much more, are we educating for jobs or are we educating to create jobs? Are we educating for the first job you're going to have, or are we educating for the fifth job you're going to have, which may not exist yet.
Right.
There's also the question of, are we creating an instrumental education? So do you learn how to code a code that might not exist 10 years from now? Really, is that what your education should be about? Or are we teaching you flexibility, creative thought, the ability to learn new material quickly so when that code doesn't exist anymore, you can rapidly pick up the new one?
Ali, real interesting, and I'd love to hear from you too. I'm fascinated by this idea of, you know, how we've always gone around and around on, are we educating you for the job you need as soon as you graduate, or the job that you might have 10 years from now, the company that you might create? It's a really interesting question. I wonder what you think.
Actually, I think we are educating for both, because students today, as you know, one of the national titles these days or headline is the death that the students have after they graduate. Therefore, they need to get a job today. But also, I agree with Beth that you have to prepare them for the future, because the study shows that in technology, what they learn in their first year in the college probably is going to be obsolete by the fourth year when they graduate. But I want to go back to how can we bring the liberal arts and technology together. Many years ago, when I was working at Digital Equipment Corporation, we had this saying that this engineer is such a great engineer, just send the food under the door, they deliver the code, which meant you can't go near them.
He doesn't interact with anybody.
That does not work anymore. We need to train these students and workers to become people that they're going to be dealing with the public. They can work with other people. They're going to be doing different things than just coding.
Well, we're going to go to a short break. When we come back, we'll start taking your phone calls. And just on that point that you made, Beth, Steve Jobs once said, it's in Apple's DNA that technology alone is not enough. It's technology married with liberal arts, married with humanities, that yields us the result that makes our hearts sing. So we'll talk a little bit more coming up about how we do that, and definitely hear from our listeners. We'd love to hear from you this hour. The phone number here in the Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And we'll be back in a minute.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. Want to join the Exchange team? Well, the Barber and Dick Couch Fellowship is your opportunity. NHPR is looking for a recent college graduate who's savvy with social media and eager for hands-on experience with New Hampshire's signature statewide talk show. Apply today at nhpr.org. More on the status of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math on the Exchange, and a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, the battle over student loan rates. Support for NHPR comes from UR members. Support also comes to us from Dana-Farber, New Hampshire Oncology, Hematology in Londonderry, offering consultations with disease specialists from Dana-Farber in Boston. DanaFarber.org/Londonderry. And Windows and Doors by Brownell, featuring energy-efficient Marvin products for your replacement or new construction project. Showroom at the Powerhouse Mall, West Lebanon. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the stir over STEM, the push these days to enhance science, technology, engineering, and math education. We're talking about that, whether it's possible to go overboard with this. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. If you work in a STEM-related business, what do you think of the current emphasis on your field? Do you think it's overdone? Do you think it's overdue? Also, if you're an employer, what skills are you most looking at when it comes to hiring someone? And if you're a recent high school or college graduate, what choices are you thinking about, either in terms of a career or a field of study, given the interest and attention on STEM these days? The number for you to join us again is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. And Fred Coker, Ali Rafimir, Beth Solano, let's go to our callers. And Andrew's calling from Bradford. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Thanks. I'm a school board member and full-time performer, and one of the big things that we are considering in our district is how to engage the arts as part of the STEM initiative, taking it from STEM to STEAM, because studies show that the creative economy is a significant part of our financial growth down the road. And we want to, I'm curious if your speakers could talk about the connection between creativity and critical thinking as far as problem solving and looking for personal initiative from the students as they're taught how to learn not only the technology side, but to add assets and resources to either their company or their individuals if they decide to go into business for themselves.
And again, Andrew, STEM to STEAM means adding A for the arts in STEM, right?
Yes.
Okay. Fred Coker, what do you think?
Well, I'm going back to Steve Jobs, whom you referenced a minute ago. He said that good engineering is important, but what matters is really design. And design comes from a creative mind. I would suggest to your caller that he arrange for the students in his schools to go visit local businesses that and to see what they do and how they do it and why they do it, and quiz the owners of the business about the kind of people they hire and why they hire them. That, as much as anything I can think of, will influence the thinking of young people.
And the arts push, you would probably be all behind that, given what you said earlier.
Yeah, I think you'll run into the same thing that I referenced earlier, and that is that CEOs and vice presidents and general managers of companies are looking for the well-rounded employee. Yes, they need the STEM expertise, but they also need somebody who can innovate. And innovation comes from a creative mind, and creative mind comes from the liberal arts and humanities.
Thanks a lot for the call, Andrew. And good luck with STEM to STEAM. That's a great little phrase there. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. So we've all said, yes, everyone needs to do both. And yes, everyone needs to be well-rounded. And gee, Fred Coker, wouldn't it be great if someone could do a undergraduate in a STEM field and a graduate in some other perhaps more artistic field or creative field. But as you all know, time is limited. Money is limited. So maybe to you first, Ali, but I want to hear from everybody. Okay, so you have limited resources. Where do you invest and where do you say not this year? Dean of, UNH Manchester.
Actually, in addition to what Fred said, there is other solution to do it during the undergraduate. We need to make our programs, undergraduate programs, more flexible. Let's pick an example. If you have a computer science major, why not make it flexible enough to give enough courses to the students to do a minor or to do a specialization in other areas in liberal arts? There is a possibility we can do that one. Has been done before and is successful. In other words, give the general education, great education while they're undergraduate in addition to their STEM majors.
There's a push on, and I'm sure you're well aware of this, Ali, to streamline the college education. It's gotten very expensive. Maybe get a 3-year degree instead of a 4-year degree. So if you did what you're suggesting, which is integrate, add more liberal arts into the STEM degrees and vice versa, would you face some pushback from students who say, look, I need to just pay for this degree, get in and get out. Why do I need to take a foreign language? Do you know what I'm saying there?
Yeah, yes, I do. There is another solution to solve that problem of the number of years is start early. UNH Manchester just started the new pilot program this spring, which was very successful. We offer college courses to high school juniors and seniors. The plan is it was so successful that we're going to repeat that one in the fall. The plan is by the time the students, they graduate from high school, they at least done 1 or 2 semesters of college work before they come to college. Start early.
What do you think about that, Beth? Again, it's great to integrate, but some people don't have the time or money, and there's a push on to get in and get out.
Right. And I think we face two groups of college students, the get in and the get out, and the I'm a junior and I still don't know what I want to do. And so designing a curriculum that works for both of those groups of students, which are two huge groups, is really tough. I think part of the key is students need to understand that there's majors, there's minors, and there's their general education, and that general education isn't solely, I think I'll take a class because it's cool, though we need some of that. That's where the creativity comes from. But it's also, these are the key classes that actually give me some of the critical thinking skills, that I have to learn content, but I've also got to learn how to think about the content. And that's the hardest thing to get students to do, is to understand that they're learning long-term life skills, not simply short-term memorize it the night before the test skills. And so when you take an ethics class, it doesn't matter if you're debating the ethics of global warming or abortion. Whatever you're debating, you're learning the debating skill. And that skill is going to enable you to have the debate with your boss about which way does the design go on the Apple product. not simply related to marketing, but what's going to make it accessible to the broadest group. So I often think students come to college and think, I just need to get out. Here are the 15 things I need to know. And a STEM education sometimes encourages that because you learn this code or this set of technology. The broader core education or the minor in history or English gives you the, oh, it's not just what I know, it's how do I communicate it. And it's what do I know from the past that helps me think, oh, we've done this before. How do I do it differently?
And as someone who appreciates American history, as you do, Beth, I'm sure that is important. And so often we don't realize that, gee, we've been here before. As I ask about limited resources, let me just hit it on the head with you, Beth. I mean, here you are, you know, a professor of history at St. Anselm College. Every politician from President Obama on down to, you know, members of the local school board is saying STEM, 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 STEM. Nobody is talking about history or English or philosophy.
No, in fact, they're actively against it. Rick Scott's comment that we don't need more anthropologists, right? He's going to have wanted differential tuition because the other fields are, quote, less useful. I think the humanities have not often made the case that we're more than instrumental, I think is part of the problem, that there's a sense that scientists need to communicate better so they should take an English class. It's not to our benefit that we have not been pointing out maybe humanists need to take some science classes. Maybe you need the English major who really understands technology and can communicate technology, can communicate science. There's now a program at Stony Brook University where scientists actually go for, in a way, remedial communication to better learn how to communicate with the public. Why aren't the English majors the one who are figuring out how to communicate science and to relate it with the metaphors and the similes that are their stock in trade? Abraham Lincoln, in a way, was one of the greatest presidents we've ever had because everybody understood what he said, right? Politicians understand the need for communication. Scientists may need to, and humanists have simply not made their case very well for why their skills are more than instrumental, but feed that creativity, feed that communication, feed the connection of ideas.
Yeah.
And I do understand the debt issue. Man, students coming out of particularly colleges in New Hampshire have a rather high debt load. And
the
I understand,
highest in the nation.
Yeah, they need that first job. But we also need them to still be getting the jobs 20 years later. And that balance of the major, perhaps that's a STEM education, and the minor that's English, or vice versa, the English major with the computer science minor. I think students need to think a little more broadly about the long term and the short term.
Well, okay. And Fred Coker, I can see you want to jump in. And Ali, and then we got lots of callers,
yeah,
too.
It's about $1,000 difference a month for a bachelor's degree grad coming out with STEM education versus liberal arts right off the bat. And you've got to pay off those student loans. And it's huge.
Now, this is the limited resources thing. It's fine for us to sit here and say do both. But it's expensive.
Let me give another iteration to what you just said, Beth. Duke and Harvard research team in 2011 interviewed 200 Silicon Valley startups, and they asked them, what are you looking for? And they said the most common traits of hires for these folks were a passion to change the world and the confidence to defy the odds and succeed. That's what they were looking for. So whether it had that STEM degree or not, that's the kind of graduate they were looking for because they had to innovate.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we just started out the show saying New Hampshire public institutions of higher education want to double the number of STEM graduates by 2025. Is that a way to say, Fred, they shouldn't bother?
Well, no, they're meeting the demand. It's supply and demand, going back to what I said earlier. It is a demand in the business community for STEM grads. However, when they get to the companies, especially the startup companies that have to innovate and create product, they need people who can think ahead, who can think and innovate and create. And that was the whole Steve Jobs philosophy, as you well pointed out earlier.
Yeah, Ali, and then back to our callers.
I was going to say UNH actually has started thinking about, they're going to implement it very soon, introducing a certificate or area that address exactly what Beth was asking or saying, and also Fred. Areas such as entrepreneurship, an English major can easily take few courses in technology, as Beth said. We definitely have started looking at that one, because even though we are saying that we're going to increase our numbers by double our numbers by 2025, there is nothing wrong with graduating students that in a different area, but they are familiar with the STEM.
I wonder how you manage, and this is the last question I promise I'll ask about limited resources, but it is the reality. Ali, how do you manage making sure that the humanities side of your university, UNH Manchester, doesn't get underfunded, given, again, the current push for STEM from, you know, again, Senator Shaheen has an event today. The business leaders are all promoting STEM. President Obama's pushing it and so forth. How do you make sure, given that excitement over STEM, that the other areas that we've talked about don't get underfunded or underutilized?
They're not going to be underfunded, but the other areas of STEM, because of enrollment, if the enrollment is growing in those areas, that's the area you're going to concentrate. But at the same time, you have to concentrate on other ones too. It's just a matter of, as you said, resources. You still have to fund them. You cannot just ignore them because STEM is the area. Because again, I go back to what I said before. We are looking, the industry is looking for well-rounded, educated students, not just what I call computer geeks or geeks in general. We're looking for people well-rounded. They know how to communicate. They know how to, as was mentioned earlier, to be able to talk to people.
Yeah. Again, I love that story you told earlier about the engineer who worked behind the closed door and you had to slip him his food and the code would come out the other end. Go ahead, Beth, and then back to our callers.
I just want to emphasize I very much love the idea that we're going to fund STEM, in part because science and math are also part of the liberal arts, and so STEM funding doesn't mean it's anti the liberal arts. But I think we need to keep in mind we have global competitiveness issues in other areas. The United States has the lowest level of foreign language learning of anywhere. And we also are short in some other areas besides technology. So if the push for STEM underfunds the rest of higher education, we're in deep trouble. We really need to look at what parts of American society are we funding at the expense of education and think about redirecting resources to STEM and to the other areas that lead to global competitiveness.
Let's take some more calls. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Join us today as we look at the status of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. Again, getting lots of attention these days from politicians, business, education leaders. We're looking at that, why people feel that this is needed given the challenges of global competition these days. But we're also looking at what happens if you go overboard on STEM, and our guests are all making the argument for an integrated approach. The number here in the exchange for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Nick is waiting in Concord. Hi, Nick. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to comment that I really believe wholeheartedly in getting STEM degrees because I think there has been a huge focus on liberal arts over the last several decades, and the problem I see with that is exactly what the, Beth, I believe your name is?
Yep.
The problem I have with that is there's too much speculation. You know, what are we going to do in 20 years? I feel like a lot of kids get, a lot of kids do go into liberal arts degrees because they don't know exactly what they want to do. And the energy sector is growing every single day. We haven't even seen the real boom that's about to happen. Legislatures and businesses are expanding those programs constantly. And again, the other gentleman mentioned being able to pay off your student debt with a STEM degree nearly out of college. I mean, that's an extremely important thing. And with a liberal arts degree, you're kind of stumbling around. I don't know what I want to do. I don't really have a focus. I certainly agree with an integrated approach because I would not. I have taken an ethics course. I've also taken a communications course, and I found those to be invaluable. I mean, I couldn't have had an education. I can't have an education without those, or at least a fully rounded one. But I really am concerned about overdoing it in the liberal arts and humanities, and as opposed to trying to emphasize on the STEM degrees.
So, Nick, if I could summarize, you think that this emphasis on STEM is overdue. We've been too heavy on the liberal arts, and as a result, young people, as you put it, stumble around and don't know what they want to do. So the focus on STEM that we're seeing these days is welcome in your mind. Is that right?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Okay. Thanks for calling in, Nick. What do you think, Fred?
I stumbled around. I was a liberal arts major. Making the point that he's making. And here I am president of the High Tech Council in New Hampshire. How did that happen? Because I'm not a techie. But I understand creativity, and I understand the dynamics of organization and the dynamics of a business. and that allows me to be the president of the High Tech Council. Came out of my liberal arts education. I'm a good example of the fact you can move from one to the other. And you don't have to be a techie, but you have to have a creative mind in order to get into that field and mix it up with those people and understand the lingo.
Beth, I know you want to jump in. I'd love to hear from you too, Ellie. This idea that Nick raises that, you know, we've gone overboard on the liberal arts. At the beginning of the show, you mentioned that so many people go to college these days, whereas, you know, two or three generations ago, few did. What do you think about Nick's point that, yes, this emphasis on STEM is welcome, we've gone too far on the other side? And students are stumbling around, as he says.
Yeah, students are definitely stumbling around. And part of that is they're coming to college unprepared in science, unprepared in math. We can see that in national statistics, and I can see that in my classroom. I don't teach quantitative history, which I learned in graduate school. One could, but the students are not really ready for that. I think the other thing we need to pay attention to is a lot of these high-tech jobs, students perceive, again, according to national studies, as less flexible than the jobs they might get in the liberal arts. And so one of the pipeline issues for STEM is actually gender-related. Women drop out of lots of STEM fields. They don't want to major in STEM because they're not sure that they're going to be able to keep those jobs and raise kids. So we have a broader two sets of pipeline issues coming into STEM that I think encourage students to major in the liberal arts. They're not perceived as hard, and they're perceived as more flexible. And so to address those issues, this big push for funding STEM is really going to have to be a cultural shift for students.
Yeah, and there has been a big push for more women and girls in STEM for sure. But it's interesting, Ali, to hear, you know, some people have said more recently, too much emphasis on STEM, they're frustrated. And then we've got Nick saying, no, this is long overdue.
Actually, I talked to a lot of business leaders over the last few years or so in Vermont, now in New Hampshire. They're all looking for a workforce in the STEM area. In fact, even in Manchester, they're having such a hard time that businesses, the new businesses, they cannot come to Manchester because they're afraid if they come to Manchester or New Hampshire in general, they're not going to be able to get the workforce. Therefore, they're concentrating on providing services for people to be able to work. You know, Beth was talking about not being flexible. Actually, I see these areas very flexible.
Okay, we'll talk more after a short break. Nick, thank you for that call. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from AARP, presenting You've Earned a Say, a community discussion on solutions to keep Medicare and Social Security strong, inviting Granite Status to join the conversation at aarp.org/NH. And Portsmouth Symphony Orchestra presenting Berlioz's Symphony Fantastique and student concerto soloist Anna Deloy June 2nd at the Music Hall. Tickets at portsmouthsymphony.org. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
The Common Core state standards being adopted by New Hampshire are proving divisive.
I feel like this Common Core thing is just evil.
It is truly, you know, a unique document that we'll never see probably again in American education, certainly not during our lifetimes.
I'm Sam Evans Brown, NHPR's education reporter. Join me as I take a closer look at these new standards and what they mean for New Hampshire, our schools, our teachers, and our children. Catch my reports all this week on Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and NHPR.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the Socrates Exchange returns with a look at the question of justice or vengeance. Be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9 for the Socrates Exchange. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the push on these days for STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math. Join us 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We want your thoughts and questions about all the discussion these days about more investments needed in these fields. 1-800-892-6477. Again, email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Fred Coker, Ali Rafimir, and Beth Salerno, let's go back to our listeners, and I'd love to share a couple emails with you before we return to the phones. Sean in Manchester says, investment in STEM is absolutely overdue. I work for a software company, and in the past, when we can't find an American to fill an open technical position, we hire software engineers from abroad who have the background we require. Fred Coker, I have heard that the STEM discussion is part of this bigger immigration discussion that we're having right now.
It is. There are companies in New Hampshire that have – one company just recently, the general manager told me they have 50 openings. This is a manufacturing company, and they can't fill them. And these are openings for STEM workers. So that makes the point. And there are a lot of smaller high-tech companies that are growing fast that are trying to find those workers. They have to go out of state to find them.
Do they have to, or is it that they could do more in-house training and they don't want to do that in-house training?
Both. They've turned.
That's a critique that I've heard.
Absolutely. They go in-house training is a must, and they have to find people who have maybe a general aptitude for the science or for technology, and then train them in the specifics of that company. But basically, they're going to Worcester Polytech, they're going to Rensselaer, they're going to schools out of state that they know are producing graduates that will fill their needs.
Okay, so that's kind of a chilling story, a company that just can't find the workers.
Right.
Other stories that you've heard, Ali, and then I have a question for you too, Beth.
Yes, actually, one of the fastest growing companies in the New Hampshire area is thinking about buying buses. The buses, they can go to Boston to pick up engineers in the morning to drop them off at the company in Manchester and then drop them back in the afternoon.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Because they're having a hard time, as Fred said it too, to get the workforce that they're looking for, the skills set.
I remember, many months ago, Ali, we did a program on the skills gap, which is what you and Fred are talking about. And this was a professor at one of the big business schools. So he wasn't just some random person making this argument. And he said that this skills gap, this technical skills gap especially, is overstated, that it's more that companies are, A, getting too picky, and B, they don't want to do the training. So I'm just wondering what you think about that, given the desperate need by this company, it sounds like, for the right workers.
No, I think it's a combination. I think the skill set that they're looking for is not being provided. Look at our own New Hampshire. We are graduating just a computer science, about a little over 100 students, when just one company that Fred was referring to is looking for 40 people right now, today. We don't have enough of graduates with the skill set that the companies are looking for graduating these days.
How do you interpret all this need, Beth?
I was partly realizing that we haven't, we've been talking about STEM and the humanities, and we haven't drawn
in a separate.
But we also haven't drawn in what's often called professional education, students who are majoring in business, CJ, nursing, those three in particular.
What's CJ?
Criminal justice. And these are the students who come in often with a career in mind. You don't take a nursing degree unless you want to be a nurse. Many students who major in criminal justice want to be police officers or prosecutors, go to law school. Business majors often don't know what they want to do, but they think it'll get them a quick job if they're in business. And I wonder if those are the areas where these are students who are interested in jobs. Their parents may not pay for a degree in another area because they can pay back their loans. These are students who may not know about STEM education, may not have had aptitude for it or training for it, but these are the students who want a quick job and are choosing their major based on, can I be employed the day I graduate? And so I wonder if there's a whole area we haven't brought up of a pool of students ready for STEM.
Let's take some more calls. And Nancy's waiting in Kennebunk. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Good morning. Thank you for hearing me.
Sure.
I own a small business, and it really doesn't have much to do with STEM except for the fact that I use social media quite a bit. I'm in the process of putting a fundraiser together for the internet, and it's going to involve a lot of social media. But more my point is I get people who want to apply for a job. I own a surf shop, so it's kind of a cool place to work, and I get a lot of people that apply for jobs that can't spell. They can't. They have no attention to detail. They don't look around. They don't see their impact. They don't see things that need to be done that are right in front of them. And it's great to have somebody who's, and I get employees that are amazing, brilliant. I get my pick because everybody wants to have the cool job in the summer. And they're brilliant and smart. And I think you need to have people that not only are great in their field, but can see the big picture and can see the domino effect of things that they do and things that other people do, and that's effect on society and just on their immediate environment.
Wow.
And I think you have a lot of people who, yep, they can put their head down and they can write code and they can do math, and maybe they can write copy for an advertisement or something, but they can't look around besides their little cubicle that they're working in. And you really need somebody who sees the whole big picture, even if it's only the building they're in.
Right. Nancy, good to hear from you. And it is a fun job, a surf shop. What do you think, Fred Coker? She says the people she tries to hire, sometimes they can't spell and they don't have street smarts, it sounds
like. Boy, have I heard that can't spell argument. That's a big one. I hear that all the time. Isn't that amazing? I mean, they should have learned that in grade school. But there's some techie careers for liberal arts majors, and I just made a list of them before I came over real quick. Technical writing. You can actually do that if you just understand generally what that technology is about. Social media, as she mentioned, quality assurance, entrepreneurship, software development, and digital humanities. There actually is digital humanities.
What is digital humanities?
Humanities put into digital form. But you've got to have both the skill, the STEM, somewhat of a STEM skill, not very deep, and then liberal arts education to marry those two.
Wow. All right. Well, good luck, Nancy, with your summer hiring. And let's take another call. This is Chris in Nashua. Hi, Chris. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Laura.
Morning.
Yet another great topic, so thank you for these. I wanted to just let you know, I'm in the software consulting industry. I actually work for a company that supplies a software package for the consulting industry. So I actually have kind of a privileged view on the high-tech consulting world I wanted to share with you. And it's pretty much in line with what you're hearing, but one thing I wanted to add is that one thing I see from my clients, they tell me, is that it's not enough to just hire somebody who's a developer or who's just a consultant. You really need an intersection of many times two very specialized things. And I'll give you an example or a couple of examples. I have one client who can't find enough people who are specialized in database development and maintenance and applications development and maintenance for the life sciences industry. So they need people who are trained in not just computer science, but also advanced degrees in biology and pharmacology. And when you find somebody like that, you either pay them a lot of money, even if you don't have necessarily work on hand, or you lose them because they will be gone, in a blink of an eye. Another example is a software company that services the mining industry. So you need somebody who's not just, an expert at implementing and developing and so on software, but they also have to be able to speak to the very specialized needs, essentially professional geological training that the mining industry requires. And so, I could go on and on with examples like that, but to the point about having a broad exposure, I think, to the degree an applicant can study many different things or even go deep in one or two things and combine those, you can basically make a career on being highly specialized.
What do you think, Chris? And boy, I'm struck by those examples that you give, very detailed in terms of what these people need, in terms of the specific skills and the marrying of two very specific skills. I wonder what you think. Are these employers able to find these people?
In both of those examples, I can tell, without naming names, of course.
Sure.
There is a bidding war when you get to that level of specialization that, you get kids coming out of college, for example, the Colorado School of Mines, those kids are 100% employment upon graduation, and, the bidding war starts from there. So it is very difficult to find these people, to retain them without spending a fortune. You can spend a lot of time trying to uptrain them with the concern that they're just going to leave for the next, better offer. So I can understand why employers don't necessarily want to invest too much in training if you know that somebody could just leave tomorrow. And yet, when you get to hyper-specialization, is there another option?
Yeah, real interesting. Thanks a lot for calling. What do you think, Ali?
Actually, for the last 10, 12 years that I've been doing recruiting of high school students, I've noticed a big change. The students are not really looking for one area of interest. It's exactly what Chris was saying. That goes back to exactly what I said earlier. We need to make our programs more flexible. That gives them opportunity to diverse and then study in other areas.
And is that a good thing? It sounds like it
is. Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. That I really don't want to see majors, really, in my opinion, the majors that they're going to be training students in just one area. Things, they change over time. You need to give them a general education, the background, and also give them opportunity to pursue other interests they have. Computer scientists these days, they're interested in entrepreneurship. They're interested in businesses. They're interested in humanity. And therefore, give them a chance to do that through extra courses and electives that they have In their majors.
Keeping an eye on the price tag, which we talked about earlier.
Yes.
Electives are great, minors are great, but it costs money.
Yes, but if his electives are part of the program, then it doesn't cost more than their four-year program.
Got it. Yes, Beth and then Fred.
Just very briefly, I think graduate schools are now very aware of this issue. I know that the American Historical Association has moved from the language of Plan A is teach and Plan B is do the digital humanities or go into other areas, and now it's very much what else can you do with your history degree, and increasingly quantitative history or even history computing has become quite popular, and it draws new people into the field. You get different kinds of people getting graduate degrees in history because the jobs are different, and high-tech companies have begun, I think, to work with graduate programs more broadly in the humanities to say, you've got the background we want, you have the knowledge we want. How do we train you to code? How do we train you to do social media? How do we train you to do the kinds of things we need? And they are investing. Not all companies are. Lots of companies want you to be trained when you get out of graduate school. Not a lot of graduate schools yet have these kinds of interdisciplinary programs. So I think companies also need to be a little more creative about, you know what you want. How do you work with institutions of higher education to get 90% of it and then be willing to put in the money for the 10% of the training? It's not the job of colleges and universities to provide a ready workforce for you. The job of a college and university is to provide an educated workforce that you can then train for your particular requirements.
Now, that's a real interesting distinction.
Mm.
An
yeah.
educated workforce versus a workforce ready for you to pluck and put into that job.
Mm-hmm. Merrill Lynch for years has provided a one-year program. They take all of college graduates in a variety of majors, and they provide a full year of training, and those people stay.
Fred.
And that's the difference between Bill Gates and Steve Jobs' approach to education. Bill Gates says, teach to the jobs, and Steve Jobs says, teach to the person and their interests. A very good distinction that Beth made. I just wanted to indicate, to follow up on your last caller, there's a profession that did not exist a decade ago, and it's cybersecurity. And that is going to it does require not only STEM skills, but analytical thinking.
And maybe even some political science
and some of the history that Beth is talking about,
because all these security issues have, you know, evolved. They haven't just sprung on us from nowhere. That is really interesting. Thank you for that call. Let's try and squeeze in one more if we could. Danny's waiting in Keene. Hi, Danny, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. I have two sons in college. Actually, one has just graduated, and one was in technical school, and the other is in a liberal arts education. They're both in terrific colleges, and they're both coming out, I think, with the type of skills that employers want. In fact, my older boy, who graduated, as I said, from technical school, not only studied design in college, but he also studied communication. He had a dual major, and he was offered a high-paying and prestigious job right out of college after interning with a company in New York City last summer. So he was able to kind of get both. And then our other son, who's in school in Colorado, at Colorado College, a wonderful liberal arts college, is studying film, and he also has been offered a couple of internships and then a grant by Colorado College to study in Brazil this summer. And I think he's going to come out with the type of technical skills that one needs, but also communication skills that one needs. So I think the bottom line from my perspective is, as a parent, when we're guiding our children to college, we want to make sure that we're involved in the conversation, be discerning in terms of what type of majors are being offered, and guide them towards majors and fields of study that are going to give them some technical but also lots of communication and some of those liberal arts skills that I think are still very necessary in the workplace.
All right. Well, you must be a proud papa, Danny. That sounds great.
We are.
All right. That's wonderful. Congratulations. And I think that relates to the themes that we've talked about this hour is, you know, it isn't one or the other. It's both. And it sounds like Danny's sons are definitely reaping the benefits of that. Thanks, Danny, for that call. Here's an email that came in earlier from Kyle. He's got a lot of things to say, and I don't have time to read them all. But thank you, Kyle. He is an engineer, he says, with 7 years in the field of engineering, particular electrical engineering. Here's his question. How do we instill in our youth that STEM is interesting, fun, and perhaps more important now than ever, pays well? I think there was some statistic that said engineers feel the most amount of job satisfaction out of all other people. There is certainly something to be said for designing and building something. Kyle, thanks for that call. Ali, that relates to something you said at the beginning of the program. We're not just talking college here. We're talking K through 12.
Absolutely. At UNH, we actually have started offering classes to K through 12. I just finished last month teaching 100 fifth graders from Beach Street School that they came through the training of 6 weeks. 6 weeks of coming every week to the college that I was able to teach. And I can tell you this one, if you just saw their faces after every class, how excited they were.
What were you teaching them?
I was teaching computer animation. Basically teaching them how
say
to
no
do,
more.
teaching them how to do programming without actually do programming. You can do the programming concepts but using animation. And the way we need to work is these are students, they just finished. They're fifth grader. They just finished last month. We need to bring them back. We can't just leave them and then expect them, especially female students, to continue being excited. Therefore, we need to bring them back in more events.
All right. All of you, this has been really interesting. There's 10 more questions I could have asked each one of you. Thank you very much for being here. Ali Rafimir, it was nice to meet you. Thank you
for being here.
Ali Rafimir, Dean and Director of UNH Manchester and a Professor of Computer Science there. Beth, good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Beth Salerno, Associate Professor of History at St. Anselm College. And Fred Coker, always a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Laura.
Fred Coker, President of the New Hampshire High Technology Council and founder and President of Coker and Company, a marketing and communications firm. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteers are Priscilla Malcolm and Alan Cohen. Our intern is Tim Camerato. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow it's the Socrates Exchange on the question of justice or vengeance. Justice is often defined as fairness, the dispassionate rule of law, while vengeance as a personal vendetta. But when justice doesn't seem enough, is vengeance the answer? Does justice bring closure, while vengeance is perpetual? Does justice require that victims feel avenged? Join us for the Socrates Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.